Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today we are getting into the ongoing, I'm going to call it an ongoing energy crisis in South Africa, simply because the danger, the prospect of things like load shedding always seems to be looming, somewhere on the horizon for South Africans. It can happen randomly that you find yourself actually getting a notification that we're now at stage 1, 2, 3 of load shedding, and that power is going to go out for 2, maybe 4 hours in a particular day. And part of the issue has been over the last decade the fact that the country just doesn't have capacity. And recently we actually saw the Medupi power plant, which has taken quite a long time to actually come online fully. We heard this week that they had an explosion which took out one of their units and tripped another. So we're here to just talk about, what does all of this mean? How deep or how big is this issue? And as a country, what does it mean for our energy security? And to help us to maybe wade through this very important topic and just talk about some of the economic considerations, we are joined by Dr. Jared Wright, who is a principal engineer at the CSIR, and we're just going to be hearing from him because he is a qualified electrical engineer with particular interests in power system operations, planning, markets, and economics. Dr. Wright, how are you today?
Good on you, and good afternoon to everyone, or good day, or good evening.
Thank you so much for being with us. Maybe as a place to start, we always want to understand the context within which our guests are coming from. So CSIR, which stands for the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, for South Africa. When we talk about the CSIR, what work does it actually do, and in your role specifically, what are you involved in?
Yeah, so the CSIR is a nationally owned and legislated scientific research council, multidisciplinary in nature. So energy is just one component of the research that's undertaken. And it's a combination of decision support to technology development, as well as, of course, human capacity building in the sciences particularly. Where I sit is in a research area called the Energy Center, and a particular research group called Energy Systems, where we do exactly that. We look at energy from a systemic perspective, all the way down to the technologies that make up that system, all the way up to the economics behind that and how they are operated as well as planned in the long term.
And I guess with all of that, your particular interest when it comes to energy, what type of work are you helping with national policy? What do you do?
Yeah, so specifically the work that I'm has been involved in and I'm involved in at the moment is policy support, both for national government as well as local government. This looks at towards sort of the long-term energy systems and how they could fit together. So, for example, assisting and contributing to what South Africa's energy mix could look like into the future, the energy choices that we have in terms of technologies, but then also assisting particular enterprises and corporations as to their operational efficiencies when it comes to energy, as well as then their long-term planning as to what they should do next, and particularly around tactical issues and more strategic issues as it relates to the decarbonization agenda and, of course, the need to clean up the ways in which we utilize energy and, of course, then supply energy to end-use customers.
Okay, cool. So at least we know that we're talking to someone who understands what's actually going on the ground. And against that backdrop, maybe you can give us some insight. I think we've all sort of heard that there was this explosion that happened at the Medupi power station earlier in the week. If you're a person who believes that the week starts on Sunday, then it was earlier this week. If you're a person who believes the week starts on Monday, then it it was last week, but basically on Sunday we heard about the fact that there was that explosion that happened to Unit 4 at you know, at the power station. We've heard about hydrogen and all of these things. Maybe you can take us through, you know, simply what actually happened there, because it sounds like there was some maintenance that was happening, and you know, in them, you know, purging the generator, whatever that means exactly, that there was some, you know, that they didn't follow the normal procedure, and that actually led to the explosion happening.
Yes, I'll try and put it in the most understandable terms possible, at least what I've seen and what I've heard, and what is in the public domain as communicated by Eskom. But essentially what they were doing is they were doing exactly that, purging the generator of hydrogen. Hydrogen is used to cool the generator. It's a very large piece of equipment, but then, of course, because of the fact that it is very large and does supply a lot of power and therefore energy, can actually get quite hot and needs to be cooled. So they were taking the unit offline and they were purging it of hydrogen, which is what is used to cool it, as I was mentioning, of which when they do that, there are, of course, safety procedures and protocols that need to be followed, because hydrogen, as you know, is quite a combustible gas and can, as it did, unfortunately, combust with oxygen when they combine. So the purging of the generator was being undertaken. As part of that, some oxygen did get into that. They were going to be also flushing it with carbon dioxide to neutralize that. Unfortunately, that mixture happened. The hydrogen then combusted, and that damaged certain components of the generator, as well as certain components of the turbine and turbine hall. The information that's at least in the public domain for now is that the damage is quite extensive. It hasn't been confirmed as to the numbers, but I think the communication earlier this week from the Eskom CEO is in the order of about 1.5 to 2 billion rands worth of damage to the unit. Similarly, the unit that was being taken off, Unit 4, when it did unfortunately explode, the Unit 5 that is adjacent to it also tripped off the network. I'm not sure if that has returned yet, but what that essentially means is that we lost about 720 megawatts of capacity off the grid, plus another 720 megawatts thereafter as the other unit that tripped as a result of this explosion.
Is there a way to maybe contextualize what those 700 megawatts actually mean in terms of, I think the last number that I heard, maybe you can correct me, is that on a normal day, South Africa needs about 30,000 megawatts?
Yeah, so we need about 30 to 33,000 megawatts, depending on if it's summer to winter. So during winter now, it's on the higher end of that. To put it into perspective, we have about 38,000, almost 39,000 megawatts of installed coal capacity, of which, as I mentioned, about 700 megawatts is one unit and two units tripped. So that's 1,400 megawatts of the 38,000.
Okay, I think, yeah, that definitely helps. Because, you know, sometimes when we hear some of these numbers, it's sometimes a bit hard, especially for some of us, you know, less technically inclined, especially in the electrical field. We might not fully understand, you know, what that means, because someone would then be saying, oh, okay, cool. So you've got 38,000 installed capacity. The country only needs 30,000, which means even if, you know, 1,500 is off the grid, you know, then we should still be fine. Is there really anything to worry about?
For the most part, that's installed capacity. It's not always that at least is nominal capacity. It's not that is then always available. So there are a range of units that would likely be offline at any point in time for a combination of reasons, one of which would be planned maintenance. So the units would actually be taken out. Maintenance is undertaken for a certain period of time and then returned to service. Or there is a unit breakdown or an outage, and that would then be unplanned and a certain amount of capacity then would be offline. At any point in time, it could be anywhere between 5,000 to 12,000 megawatts that are off the grid, at least in terms of that installed coal base. And that ranges, and it depends on, as I was mentioning, whether the units are out on a planned maintenance outage, or whether they are out as a result of a breakdown.
Okay, that certainly helps, you know, to frame what's actually happening on the ground. And I guess it helps to explain sometimes why A unit going down like this becomes of national interest because you do find yourself thinking about, you know, the power generation and, you know, the capacity. And I guess that those are some of the things, you know, that then lead to, you know, potentially load shedding. So from the what you're saying and the explanation that you've just given us, I guess the question that many people would just want to know is, what does this mean, you know, for, I guess, the future or possible prospects of load shedding? Because at least for a layman, it sounds like that risk, you know, has been increased.
Yeah, so this would essentially fall under an unplanned outage, of course, and therefore does increase the risk of load shedding as a result of less supply capacity being available. It does not necessarily mean that there will therefore be load shedding, but it increases the risk of that. Specifically more that it is going to be an extended outage. And what I mean by that is in the order of months and potentially years. The information earlier that I was reading this week is in the order of about 12 to 18 months, potentially even up to 2 years, that this particular unit will be offline and being repaired, which then does, of course, put us in a very precarious position. As even before this, our supply demand balance was very tight. Of course, a euphemism for saying we've had a lot of load shedding, unfortunately. And of course, in the first half of 2021, we've seen quite substantial amounts of load shedding. So it definitely does not help the situation. It definitely puts us in a worse position than we were before. But it is, when I say only, it is only one unit at a power station that has six units. So it's not a massive impact on the entire power system, but there is a big impact as a result of it being quite a large unit, like I mentioned before, in the order of about 700 megawatts of the total nominal capacity of almost 39,000 megawatts.
And the next natural question then becomes, what does it take to get this one unit out of six units back online? Because some of the estimates we're seeing out there, people are talking about 2 year, you know, sort of time horizons. And I think you mentioned at the beginning something about, you know, 2 billion rand that it might take to get all of this, you know, actually happening. I guess because of the amount of cost overruns that have resulted through Medupi, I guess this is why people would be, I guess, concerned just around that, to be like, oh, here we go again with Medupi.
Yeah, it is most definitely concerning and worrying. I think Eskom have communicated exactly that as well during the week, that it's quite concerning that this happened, and it probably couldn't have come at a worse time for them as they trying to do as much maintenance as possible, trying to get through a very difficult winter period and going in towards spring. This then happened. Not something that you would want to have seen as a business, but more specifically, just as the citizenry and as businesses for the entire country, not something that you would want to see at all. The quoted number that's in the public domain for now from the Eskom CEO is in the order of 1.5 to 2 billion rand over and above the existing cost completion of Medupi Power Station overall. The last numbers that we were seeing in the order of 160 billion to complete the power station, as published by Eskom, therefore this additional 2 billion adds further onto that. So it definitely doesn't help. It makes the cost completion higher. And over and above the fact that although the units have been said to be completed, there are some design defects that are still being rectified over the next few months and years. In addition to this very unfortunate circumstance that they're in.
Now, Jared, you mentioned earlier on that part of your work is, you know, helping with policy and things like that. And one would wonder, from a policy point of view, what measures can actually be taken to prevent stuff like this from happening? Because as much as we talk about you know, the faults of Eskom, or, you know, their inability to meet national demand, all of this usual negativity within which we frame Eskom, this was an accident, right? This was not something that was planned. No one goes about, you know, repairing a generator and hopes that it's going to explode. So I don't think, you know, we can really be sitting here and saying and wagging our fingers at Eskom. It was an accident. But in future, how, you know, how should or could the likes of Eskom or, you know, energy policy actually, you know, be framed to help to at least minimize or mitigate the impact of some of these things?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you need to make sure that power system going forward needs to be as adequate as possible and resilient as possible to these kinds of shocks. I think all the safety protocols and processes are all in place. Eskom have very strict policies around this. They mentioned very clearly and very explicitly in a lot of their communication that this seems to be something that was indeed human error. So it was an accident. And therefore, of course, maybe some tighter controls on, around the way in which that is enforced into the future from Eskom's perspective could be a way in which to make sure this doesn't happen again, of which I can guarantee that's happening internally, or almost certainly guarantee that that's happening internally. Indeed, it might be a matter of further training. It might be a matter of you making sure that there's the human capacity and capabilities that can then do this in the future, and that we have sufficiently skilled up teams, whether it's internal within Eskom or subcontractors that contract to Eskom. But all of that is in place. And again, as I was saying, they've mentioned it was an accident. It seems to be something of human error. And the team members, or at least parts of those team members that were part of this process that unfortunately went very wrong, have been put on a special leave whilst the investigation is underway. Maybe just to talk more specifically in the medium to longer term, though, there's a lot of options in the way in which we can diversify our energy mix to make sure that we don't necessarily just purely rely on one energy source. You know, the single resource risk and single area of failure being specifically the coal fleet and coal as a fuel means that we do need to be diversifying the ways in which we use energy and moving to other forms of cleaner energy. We already do use some level of clean energy in the form of nuclear as well as some level of renewables, but we're still very dominant on coal as our primary energy source in the power sector.
I'm actually glad that you brought that one up, because that was literally going to be the next thing I asked, to say, does something like this perhaps further emphasize the need to have those other, you know, sources of energy? I think a couple of months ago, we were very excited as a country to hear about the lifting of those restrictions for independent producers to go to up to, is it 100 megawatts that they can actually, you know, produce on their own, you know, things like that. So the fact that you bring that up, it's a good one. And I'm just wondering, just with the way that things are going, do you think things like this, I guess, speed up those things? Because as much as the announcement was made earlier on, that is still yet to be gazetted.
Yeah, indeed. It could. It probably should. The energy mix in terms of how it's going to evolve towards 2030 is quite well defined within the IRP, the Integrated Resource Plan, of which the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy is the custodian. And perhaps there's a case to be made for that energy mix to be accelerated and diversified quickly. Perhaps not, though. It has to be managed in the best manner possible. And of course, as part of a bigger just transition discussion, making sure that particular communities and particular geographical domains like in Mpumalanga are not severely affected by this and left behind. We need to do it in the most best phased and managed manner possible. Just to say that, you know, since 2013, 2014, we've been introducing more and more renewables into the mix, particularly variable renewables in the form of solar PV and wind, balancing that with other forms of clean energy that have been around for a very long time, the likes of the imported hydropower from Mozambique, as well as our single nuclear power station at Coburg down in the Cape. So it's not like we are completely reliant on coal. We do have a dominant component of our energy mix coming from coal, though. So there is that definite need to diversify the energy mix going forward and into the future.
As we end off, Dr. Wright, I wanted us to maybe take a step back to look at Eskom and South Africa's power generation within the context of Africa, if not even the world, because we tend to grumble inside South Africa about load shedding and all of these issues, you know, but not sometimes not really being fully cognizant of the fact that just north of our borders, there are countries where electricity can go out for 18 hours in a day. So maybe you can give us some context, if you have any, just around how Eskom is doing as a power utility compared to some of our compatriots in the region, because I'm not sure whether we really take time to appreciate sometimes that Eskom is one of the biggest power utilities in the world.
Indeed, a very large utility and with a very single resource risk that sits there, as mentioning earlier. But look, I don't think there's any way to really sugarcoat the fact that our supply-demand balance has been constrained for a very long time. And load shedding shouldn't be something that we should have to get used to as a citizenry or as business more generally. I think load shedding has to be eliminated as soon as possible. We have to make sure that we get supply capacity onto the grid as soon as possible to then meet our growing energy demand needs. Having said that, our demand has actually been quite flat for a very long time, mostly as a result of, to be honest, a very slowly growing economy to stagnant economy. And therefore, you know, if we are going to be coming out of this last 12 to 18 months that has been COVID and recover the economy as we expect to do, we have to have energy to supply that. It's an enabler and it's a prerequisite. Any other interventions that we have, if we don't have energy, will just not be successful without it. So the various steps that are being taken, of which they are being taken, the risk mitigation program, the intervention on the licensing threshold being lifted, as well as then the implementation of the IRP, really do need to be fast-tracked and in parallel implemented. We don't have time to waste, and we have to actually implement it as soon as possible. If I could just reflect on more internationally, load shedding is not a thing that anyone really knows about. When I say anyone, I say power systems that are of similar size on other continents. It's not something that is intentionally invoked on customers. So it's not something that we should be seeing as normal in any manner, to be completely honest. I think we do need to be establishing ourselves as a gold standard. Eskom was established as one of the best global utilities in the world in the order of just over a decade ago. I think it was about 15 years ago. And I don't see any reason why there cannot be that utility again in the medium to long term.
All right. So those are some words of encouragement coming from Dr. Jared Wright, who is a principal engineer with the CSIR, giving us some insight into this week's explosion at Medupi Power Plant. Just talking about the unit, what does it mean? How much power was actually being generated by that unit? What does that mean within the context of South Africa's normal demand on a daily basis, which sits at around 30 or so thousand megawatts, installed capacity at about 38,000. But he's just mindful at saying that at any given time, there can be some units around the country that are not available, which adds to that risk of load shedding that we've been seeing. And on that point, he's saying that load shedding is not something that should be normal. When you look at Eskom within the context of other similarly sized power utilities around the world, just a decade and a half ago, it was considered one of the best power utilities in the world. So for us to have slipped to where we are at the moment, it's not a good thing. And he's saying that more can actually be done to actually make sure that we get rid of load shedding in the long term. But also just making a case to say that all of this highlights the fact that the energy mix does need to be diversified, just so that we can reduce that risk of getting all our power from one source. Dr. Jared Wright, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
A couple of months ago, we were very excited by the announcement that independent power producers could actually get to about 100 megawatts, if I remember correctly. That announcement that was made by President Cyril Ramaphosa, you know, just around trying to mitigate the risk of having that one source of power that we rely on, and getting more people to actually make their own power, maybe even add to the national grid, or to at least supply their own operations, maybe even surrounding areas. And that's really, really a good thing, and probably where the future of energy is going, where we're going to be having more localized production, and especially more independent production. As Dr. Wright says, we do need to diversify the mix of energy in South Africa. The sources from where power is coming from is a very important issue to deal with. And it actually helps stops a number of businesses and individuals around the country because we don't like load shedding. We don't want this thing. And as you said, it's not something that's normal for similarly sized utilities around the world. So anything that can actually come in and actually help to offset a little bit some of that demand, some of that power generation will be a good thing going forward. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.